Continuing. During 1963, several participants in Operation 40 were caught smuggling narcotics into the U.S. from Cuba, and the use, by the program, of former Batista and Traficante criminal associates in the program began to cause, quote, problems of control of illegal profiteering in the program. But the program continued, as did the operations of the shooter team. In November of 1963, President Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas, Texas. We should just mention parenthetically, at the same time that Kennedy himself had begun to have second thoughts about the way the whole Cuban-American relationship was going and was beginning to make overtures to Fidel Castro and the government in Cuba. In 1965, Operation Mongoose and JM Wave were shut down, and Theodore Shackley and his deputy, Thomas Clines, were transferred to Laos. In 1965, this is under the subheading, The Move to Southeast Asia, Political Assassination Financed by Opium. In 1965, Theodore Shackley was made the deputy chief of station for the CIA in Laos. Thomas Clines became his deputy. In 1965, Theodore Shackley and Thomas Clines secretly began to provide air support in Laos for one Vang Pao, capital V-A-N-G, capital P-A-O, in a three-sided war in which Vang Pao was engaged in Laos for control of the illegal opium trade in that nation. During 1965, Vang Pao's competitors in the opium trafficking business were mysteriously assassinated. By 1966, Vang Pao was the unchallenged head of opium production and trafficking in Laos. Under the direction of Deputy Chief of Station Theodore Shackley, and his deputy, Thomas Clines, a secret program was undertaken to train indigenous Mayo tribesmen in guerrilla war tactics for use in, quote, unconventional warfare activities. These activities included the art of political assassination. Starting in 1966, their, quote, special operations of the Mayo tribesmen began to be secretly financed by Vang Pao.
In 1966, a special operations group was established in Vientiane, Laos. This group was a multi-service military operation known as the Military Assistance Group Special Operations Group, MAGSOG, or the Joint Task Force for Unconventional Warfare. This group, among other tasks, supervised the secret political assassination activities of this secret unit of Mao tribesmen, although the group operated, in fact, under the supervision of Theodore Shackley and Thomas Clines. From 1966 to 68, the commander of the Special Operations Group, which supervised the political assassination program in Laos, Cambodia, and Thailand, was Defendant General John K. Singlaub. One of his deputies in the program was a young Marine Corps major by the name of Oliver North. The deputy air wing commander for the Special Operations Group was Air Force General Richard Secord. His superior was General Heine Adderholt. One of the members of the Army Special Forces units in the group was one Dewey Owen, the older brother of Defendant Robert Owen. Between 1966 and 71, this Special Operations Group based in Laos was in fact under the supervision of Theodore Shackley and Thomas Clines. During the period from 1966 to 75, this Special Operations Group in Laos, through the secret Mayo Tribesman Unit funded by a portion of Vang Pao's opium income, secretly assassinated over 100,000 non-combatant village mayors, bookkeepers, clerks, and other civilian bureaucrats in the countries of Laos, Cambodia, and Thailand. In 1967, Theodore Shackley became CIA Chief of Station in Laos when former Station Chief Gordon Jurgensen was made Chief of Station in Vietnam. Thomas Clines continued to be a deputy to Shackley in Laos. In 1968, Theodore Shackley's former associate in the JM Wave program in Miami, Mafia Lieutenant Santo Traficante, flew from Tampa, Florida to Southeast Asia, where he met at a hotel in Saigon with Shackley's Laotian associate, Vang Pao. In this meeting, Santo Traficante agreed to become a partner with Vang Pao in the importation of China white heroin into the United States. By 1969, Santo Traficante had become the number one importer and distributor of China white heroin in America. Vang Pao's profits increased accordingly, as did his financial contribution to the secret Mayo tribesman assassination and unconventional warfare project supervised by Theodore Shackley and Thomas Clines in Laos, Cambodia, and Thailand. At the end of 1971, Theodore Shackley and Thomas Clines were transferred from Laos to the United States, where Theodore Shackley became the chief of the CIA's Western Hemisphere operations. Thomas Kleins became his deputy. This division of the CIA directs the operations of the CIA in Central and Latin America. From this post, Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins directed the operation known as Track 2 in Chile, which directed the political assassination of Chilean socialist President Salvador Allende and his chief of staff in Chile, and the military overthrow of the democratically elected government of Chile in September of 1973. So again, some of the key names to remember here, obviously Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins, both going back to J.M. Wave and both associated with Santo Traficante, Vang Pao and some of the others involved with this whole secret team, in particular Santo Traficante, one of the major people that we talked about in our Radio Free America series dealing with the intelligence services and narcotics. Interestingly enough, Santo Traficante, though he was an old man, is another of the key players in this situation to drop dead during the course of the investigation.
Yeah, again, it's most important to note this eternal triangle that we seem to have developed in this country as regards a covert political activity, that there seems to be this triangle between the mafia, the intelligence agencies, and the drug traffickers, and again, dating back, obviously, clear back to J.M. Wave and beyond, one of the key players in several of these, including the Cuban, the attempts to overthrow Castro, the Laotian and generally the Southeast Asian heroin connection, and now, as Dave mentioned, clear up into the Contragate days, Santo Traficante. We're going to read a little bit about the late Santo Traficante in the San Francisco Chronicle for Thursday, March 19th, 1987, this by way of being an obituary. Tampa, Florida is the dateline. Santo Traficante Jr., the reputed head of organized crime in Florida since the early 1950s, died on Tuesday at the Texas Heart Institute in Houston. Traficante, age 72, had been in failing health for several years and was at the hospital for heart bypass surgery when he died. He was rated number 15 last October in a Fortune magazine list of the 50 most powerful organized crime figures in the United States. Most of his income was said to come from gambling, loan sharking, and narcotics activities. He reportedly assumed the role of mob boss in Florida when his father, Santo Sr., died of cancer in August 1954. Traficante, who was born November 4, 1915 in Tampa, was consistently named by government investigators as a charter member of the mafia ever since the Senate's Kefauver Committee hearings in Tampa in 1950. In October of 1970, Traficante pleaded guilty to an obstruction of justice charge and was given a one-year suspended sentence for a misdemeanor, the first conviction against him that stuck. He had been arrested in the past for bribery, lottery, and investigation for homicide, but nothing was ever proven. A prior conviction, on a charge of bribing a St. Petersburg vice officer, was reversed by the U.S. Supreme Court. In September 1978, Traficante told a House committee that he participated in a CIA assassination plot against Cuban President Fidel Castro because, quote, "I thought I was helping the United States government," unquote. He was also a witness in 1977 before the House committee investigating the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, but he refused to answer questions. In July 1979, the House panel concluded in its final report that Traficante and the reputed mafia boss in New Orleans, Carlos Marcello, were the, quote, "most likely family members of organized crime to have played a role in the Kennedy assassination." So Santo Traficante, again, as Dave noted and as the article notes, an old man in the hospital for heart surgery anyway, nonetheless becomes yet another of the significant players. Again, note Santo Traficante's early and intimate connections to Theodore Shackley, Thomas Kleins, through them to Ed Wilson, E. Howard Hunt and his whole brigade earlier on in Cuba.
And the entire anti-Castro milieu, which began there, moved to Southeast Asia, and is obviously back on more familiar turf with the Miami Vice connections we've been looking at to the Contra Supply effort.
That's right.
Now, we're going to be taking a look now at the Southeast Asian career of this secret team and the actual formation of the secret team as such. One thing that I would note here, it's perhaps a semantic problem under the circumstances, but the referral to this group as being private, they're not private, and I think one of the problems here is to distinguish exactly where this is official government policy and where it's private. Although these individuals are not working in concert with the dictates of American law, they are in fact functioning in an official U.S. capacity, and that is precisely why this is such a significant case. A nice article based on the Christic Institute chronology itself was published in the San Francisco Examiner on Monday, December 29th of 1986. We read this article, or large sections of it, in Radio Free America number 27 at the end of the program. This is by Vince Bielski. It's a special to the Examiner headlined, Secret Team Linked with Iran Scandal. Suit traces North's unit to CIA activities in the 60s. And the article reads as follows. A secret team of former CIA and military officials and arms dealers was involved in the covert weapons shipments to Iran and the Nicaraguan Contra rebels under the direction of fired White House aide Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, according to an affidavit filed in a Miami lawsuit. Roots of the team date to the secret U.S. war against Cuba in 1961, and its members have since been involved in political assassination programs in Laos, Vietnam, Chile, and now Nicaragua, the affidavit says. The team has also been involved in opium and cocaine trafficking to fund their operations, says the affidavit, filed December 15th in a Miami federal court in support of a lawsuit brought by Dan Sheehan, an attorney with the Christic Institute in Washington, D.C. The suit names 29 alleged operatives in the arms network as defendants and alleges that they supplied the explosives used in the May 1984 assassination bid against Contra leader Aiden Pastora in Nicaragua, in which 8 people were killed and Pastora was wounded. The plaintiffs, Martha Honey and Tony Avergan, are U.S. journalists who are seeking damages for injuries they suffered in that bombing. The affidavit is based on information from 79 sources, Sheehan says. The defendants who make up the secret team include former high-ranking CIA officials Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins, retired Major General Richard Secord, former CIA agent Rafael Quintero, and arms dealer Albert Hakim of Los Gatos. In the affidavit, Sheehan says he learned of the clandestine group from a former U.S. intelligence officer who worked in Iran, a retired CIA officer, and a former Air Force officer. The intelligence officer discussed the existence of a secret team of former high-ranking American CIA officials, former high-ranking U.S. military officials, and Middle Eastern arms merchants, who also specialized in the performance of covert political assassinations of communists, and which carried on its own independent American foreign policy, regardless of the will of Congress, the President, or the CIA, the affidavit says. The source said the team had been set up in the 1970s under the supervision of Shackley and Kleins, who were then with the CIA. They joined with Secord and Hakim and went private, unquote, the affidavit says, after leaving the agency in 1982. Skipping down in the article, Shackley and Kleins worked together at the CIA as early as 1961 after the CIA-backed Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba, the affidavit says. Shackley, the CIA station chief in Miami, and Kleins, his deputy, directed Operation Mongoose, a covert operation of guerrilla raids into Cuba in 1961 through 3, the affidavit says. Exiles involved in the secret war against Cuba have reportedly resurfaced to play a role in the Contra arms network, including Quintero, Felix Rodriguez, and Luis Posada Carriles. Rodriguez and Posada allegedly operate from Ilopango Air Base in El Salvador, where arms for the Contras are apparently stored and shipped to the Contras. In 1963, several CIA operatives under Shackley's direction were, quote, caught smuggling narcotics into the U.S. from Cuba, the affidavit reads. 2 years later, the operation was shut down and Shackley and Kleins were transferred to Laos, where Shackley was made CIA Deputy Chief of Station and Kleins continued as his deputy, the lawsuit alleges. According to the affidavit, in 1966 through 71, Shackley and Kleins directed the Special Operations Group, which trained and used Mayo tribesmen, quote, to secretly assassinate over 100,000 non-combatant village mayors, bookkeepers, clerks, and other civilian bureaucrats in Laos, Cambodia, and Thailand, unquote. That operation was funded by profits from an illegal opium trade run by a Laotian named Vang Pao, the lawsuit alleges. In 1966 through 8, the affidavit says the commander of the Special Operations Group was now retired Army General John Singlaub, who has said publicly that he is helping arm the Contras, according to the affidavit. One of Singlaub's deputies at the time, the lawsuit says, was then Marine Corps Major Oliver North. Also involved with Shackley and Kleins in the assassination program in Laos was Secord, then a deputy air wing commander with the Air Force, the affidavit says. In 1971, Shackley and Kleins were transferred to the United States, where Shackley became chief of the CIA's operations in the Western Hemisphere, and Kleins continued as his deputy. From their new post, they directed the Track 2 operation in Chile, which played a role in the assassination of Chilean President Salvador Allende and the overthrow of the elected Chilean government in 1973, the affidavit reads. All of that, obviously, we've already covered in the direct quoting from the Sheehan affidavit. Continuing now with Bielski's article. In 1974, the two were transferred to Vietnam, where Shockley joined the CIA station and Clines was once again his deputy. In 1974 and 5, they directed a project that carried out the political assassination in Vietnam of some 60,000 village mayors, treasurers, school teachers, and other non-Viet Cong administrators in an attempt to cripple Vietnam's political institutions, the affidavit says. The two funded that operation with POW opium money, according to the affidavit. Because Shockley and Clines, quote, knew that their secret anti-communist extermination program was going to be shut down in Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, and Thailand in the very near future, they, in 1973, began their own private anti-communist assassination and unconventional warfare program to operate after the end of the Vietnam campaign, the affidavit reads. This was the beginning of the secret team, which 5 years later, in the spring of 78, would approach Nicaraguan dictator Anastasio Somoza with a plan, quote, the objective of which was to carry out the political assassination of the top leadership of the Sandinista revolutionary movement, the affidavit reads. By August of 79, the secret team, unquote, was supplying the ousted dictator with military weapons for the newly formed Contra forces, the affidavit states. And again, the thing to bear in mind against this is the information that we presented in Radio Free America's 24 through 27, which deals with all of these activities and, of course, points out that this was not a private operation. It was against the laws and traditions of the United States. Regrettably, it had official sanction.
I think one of the key things that needs to be looked at in the usage of the word private here is these are operations that up till 1973 were officially part of the Nixon administration's prosecution of the war in Vietnam, the Phoenix program and things of this nature, the Mayo tribesmen doing their own Phoenix program in Laos, Cambodia, and elsewhere. And what happened is that certain people who were right in step with the Nixon administration saw that things were changing in Vietnam, saw that things were changing at home because of the beginnings of the Watergate revelation starting to come out, and decided to take the operation and move it underground. In fact, as we have seen, though, the people all the way to the top of this operation, the people backing these operations, were in fact members of the government. They considered themselves a government in exile until the Reagan administration was elected in 1980, in which time they felt it was safe to basically come home. So again, as Dave says, the usage of the word private there is kind of misleading. Anyway, continuing back to the actual Sheehan affidavit itself, the birth of the secret team. However, because Theodore Shockley, Thomas Clines, and Richard Armitage knew that their secret anti-communist extermination program was going to be shut down in Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, and Thailand in the very near future, they, in 1973, began a highly secret non-CIA-authorized program setting up their own private anti-communist assassination and unconventional warfare program to operate after the end of the Vietnam campaign. Let me make an analogy, considering that Dave and I often make analogies to Nazi Germany. When the Nazis went underground after World War II, their activities were still Nazi activities, even though the government of Germany was no longer ordering them. The Nazi hierarchy was still very much in charge.
It should also be noted that the Nazi activities before the election of Hitler as chancellor were still official Nazi activities, and in fact being operated as Freikorps operations, as underground extensions of the military. In our Aryan Nation series and in our World Anti-Communist League series, we spoke about the Reagan administration, its connections with the World Anti-Communist League and Aryan Nations, and specifically at the conclusion of Radio Free America number 13, we described the Reagan administration as the ultimate, and these were our exact words, as the ultimate exponent of Freikorps methodology. I think that description of this administration has borne out rather accurately, I think, with the revelations of the Iran-Contra scandal, because this group is indeed a Freikorps functioning, exactly as the Freikorps functioned, a covert but official assassination organization, one run beneath the view of the public with official sanction, but in essence a government within a government, similar to the Super Seismi group in the P2 in Italy, which, as we've already indicated, appears to be intersecting with this operation in a number of ways.
Like minds. From late 1973 until April of 75, Theodore Shackley, Thomas Kleins, and Richard Armitage dispersed from the secret Laotian-based Vang Pao Opium Fund vastly more money than was required to finance even the highly intensified Phoenix Project in Vietnam. The money in excess of that used in Vietnam was secretly smuggled out of Vietnam in large suitcases by Richard Secord and Thomas Kleins and carried into Australia, where it was deposited in a secret personal bank account privately accessible to Shackley, Kleins, and Secord. During this same period of time, between 1973 and 1975, Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins caused thousands of tons of U.S. weapons, ammunition, and explosives to be secretly taken from Vietnam and stored at a secret cache hidden inside Thailand. The Vang Pao monies in this secret Australian account and this large cache of stolen U.S. weapons hidden deep inside Thailand were to be used by Shackley, Kleins, Secord, Armitage, and the right-wing covert operations operatives they could persuade to join their, quote, offline's private secret team after the conclusion of the Vietnam campaign. The liaison officer to Shackley and Kleins and the Phoenix Project in Vietnam during this 1973-75 period from the 40 Committee in the Nixon White House was one Eric Von, and they say Arbod here, it's Eric Von Marbod, an Assistant Secretary of State for Far Eastern Affairs. Von Marbod shared his information about the Phoenix Project directly with his supervisor, Henry Kissinger. Saigon fell to the Vietnamese in April of 1975. The Vietnam War was over.
Continuing with the Sheehan Affidavit. This is a section called Post-Vietnam, Drugs, Arms, Scams, and Terror Continued. Immediately upon the conclusion of the evacuation of U.S. personnel from Vietnam, Richard Armitage was dispatched by Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins from Vietnam to Tehran, Iran. In Iran, Armitage, the bursar for the Vang Pao opium money for Shackley and Kleins' planned secret team covert operations program, between May and August of 1975, set up a secret financial conduit inside Iran into which secret Vang Pao drug funds could be deposited from Southeast Asia. The purpose of this conduit was to serve as the vehicle for secret funding by Shackley's secret team of a private, non-CIA-authorized black operations inside Vietnam, disposed to seek out, identify, and assassinate socialist and communist sympathizers who were viewed by Shackley and his secret team members to be potential terrorists against the Shah of Iran's government in Iran. In late 1975 and early 1976, because it says early 1986, Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins retained Edwin Wilson to travel to Tehran, Iran, to head up the secret team covert anti-terrorist assassination program in Iran. This was not a U.S. government-authorized operation. This was a private operation supervised, directed, and participated in by Shackley, Kleins, Secord, and Armitage in their purely private capacities. And I would interrupt here to say that take the word private here with a grain of salt. Although maybe not CIA authorized, they may have been NSC, NSA, DIA authorized. There are a lot of other authorizations other than CIA. Continuing with the Sheehan Affidavit. At the end of 1975, Richard Armitage took the post of a special consultant to the U.S. Department of Defense regarding American military personnel missing in action in Southeast Asia. In this capacity, Armitage was posted in the U.S. Embassy in Bangkok, Thailand. There, Armitage had top responsibility for locating and retrieving American MIAs in Southeast Asia. He worked at the embassy with an associate, one Jerry O. Daniels. From 1975 to 77, Armitage held this post in Thailand. However, he did not perform the duties of this office. Instead, Armitage continued to function as the bursar for Theodore Shackley's secret team, seeing to it that secret Vang Pao opium funds were conducted from Laos through Armitage in Thailand to both Tehran and the secret Shackley bank account in Australia at the Nguyen Han Bank. The monies conducted by Armitage to Tehran were to fund Edwin Wilson's secret anti-terrorist seek-and-destroy operation on behalf of Theodore Shackley. So again, the operations here are now intersecting with many of the other operations that we've taken a look at in our Radio Free America series. We talked about the Nguyen Han Bank and RFA number 25, Edwin Wilson, one of the key players in Task Force 157, as was Henry Kissinger. And another Nugent Hand link to the Iran-Contra scandal is coming up here in just a second. Again, I would underscore that these operations may not have been sanctioned by certain government agencies, but they were certainly not private. One of the things to evaluate in the Iran-Contra scandal is that we may be looking at a conflict between different intelligence agencies. We've seen former CIA people put to work for DIA, and among the things that may be happening within the Iran-Contra scandal, because the Christic Institute people have received a lot of information from U.S. intelligence people disenchanted with this secret team, is that we may be looking at some internecine warfare between U.S. intelligence agencies conflicting on both methods and goals. That's one of the things to bear in mind.
Now, not only are we going to examine the Nugent Hand connection and Ed Wilson's connection there, too, but, of course, another death which we forgot, a rather interesting death that just happened to also wind up around the same time and rather potentially significant in and of itself, and we'll talk about that during the course of this article. The article in question is headlined, North's AIDS Linked to Australia Study. The article is from the New York Times for Sunday, March 8, 1987, by Keith Schneider. This is special to the NYT, Dateline Washington. Several former military and intelligence officers who helped Lieutenant Colonel Oliver L. North ship weapons to Iran and Central America were closely associated with the co-founder of an Australian financial concern that collapsed in 1980, according to an Australian government investigation. The collapse of the financial concern came amid charges that it had laundered money earned from weapons and illicit drug sales. Among those linked to the failed Sydney-based concern, Nugent Hand Bank, and its co-founder, Michael J. Hand, was Richard V. Secord, a retired Air Force Major General who helped Colonel North conduct airlifts of weapons to the Middle East and Central America, according to the 4-year-old Australian investigation. The Australian study, parts of which are still secret, was conducted by the Commonwealth New South Wales Joint Task Force on Drug Trafficking and was completed in March of 83. Although it is not new, the study is receiving scrutiny again in Washington because of the details it contains about activities and movement of weapons around the world by many of the same figures involved in the Iran-Contra affair. Nipping in parenthetically, it may be receiving scrutiny, but it's been receiving precious little attention in terms of the hearings themselves. The Australian report, which has stirred congressional interest, also concluded that several former Central Intelligence Agency officials and contract operatives, among them Theodore G. Shackley, Thomas G. Clines, and Rafael Quintero, were involved in military and intelligence-related activities with Mr. Hand and other top officers of the Nugent Hand concern. The Tower Commission report on the Iran-Contra affair and other published reports have linked all of these men to operations in the Middle East and Central America, directed by Colonel North, the National Security Council aide dismissed last November by President Reagan. Mr. Secord and the other men in the network are the focus of a Senate Foreign Relations Committee investigation. The Australian study, a congressional aide said, provides additional evidence that will help the committee determine whether this group simultaneously functioned over the years as official government intelligence agents while also conducting legal and illegal operations for profit. Quote, "Given the recent revelations about these men, I am greatly concerned," said Senator Edward Zirinsky of Nebraska, a member of the Foreign Relations Committee, hours before he died of a heart attack Friday. We should just mention Zirinsky was also head of the subcommittee on...
We'll be coming to that on drugs, terrorism, and international communications.
There we go, okay.
That's what we're going to be talking about, subcommittee of that very same committee.
Investigators with the Senate and House Select Committees on Iran also are interested in what the Australian study says about Mr. Secord and his network. The study could provide clues to help them understand why Colonel North turned to Mr. Secord. The Australian study does not demonstrate that Mr. Secord, Mr. Shackley, Mr. Clines, or Mr. Quintero smuggled weapons or narcotics. It does, however, say that these men were close to Mr. Hand, a former Army Green Beret and military intelligence officer who served in Laos during the late 60s with a CIA-owned airline named Air America. It was the same period in which Mr. Secord played a large role in directing Air America's operations. Mr. Shackley and Mr. Clines were the two top officers of the CIA's Laotian station during this period as well, the report said. Mr. Hand, the report said, later worked with these men while he was directing his merchant bank, which he established in the early 1970s with Francis J. Nugent, an Australian. The Joint Task Force study was one of four that has been published in Australia since the bank collapsed after the death by suicide of Mr. Nugent in late January 1980 at 37.
That suicide should be in quotes there.
Right, quote, suicide. 6 months later, Michael Hand, then 38, disappeared and still has not been found. Two other Australian studies confirm the Joint Task Force findings. But the most recent investigation, a Royal Commission study published in 1985, disputes some of the Joint Task Force conclusions. During the 7 years it was in business, according to the Joint Task Force study, the Nugent Hand Bank was engaged in a wide range of legitimate and illegal activities conducted from offices and mail drops in 13 countries in two hemispheres, including the United States, the Cayman Islands, Hong Kong, Taiwan, the Philippines, and Thailand. The report named 26 reputed drug dealers and provided a schedule of drug traffickers. Although reluctant to draw conclusions, the report noted that Mr. Hand did extensive business with American intelligence officers in Southeast Asia in the late 60s and early 70s, and said there was, quote, evidence that, quote, Hand retained his U.S. intelligence ties throughout the 70s and probably the 80s, unquote. The evidence, however, remained classified. The Joint Task Force was told by an American witness that Mr. Hand was involved in deals, including a profitable 1976 shipment of 10 million rounds of ammunition and 3,000 weapons, including rifles and machine guns, that went from Boston through Africa, quote, and were eventually delivered to U.S. intelligence-supported forces in Angola. Mr. Hand and his bank, the report said, also took part in the movement by the United States Navy of, quote, a spy vessel to the Iranian Navy in 1976. Mr. Hand was said to have taken part in both these transactions with Edwin P. Wilson, a former CIA agent and head of a secret Navy intelligence group called Task Force 157. Mr. Wilson was arrested in 1982 and later convicted of selling arms and 20 tons of plastic explosive to Libya. The report said Mr. Wilson was close to Mr. Secord, Shackley, Mr. Kleins, Quintero through their participation in intelligence and secret military ops for 20 years. Mr. Wilson, the report said, loaned Mr. Kleins $500,000 to start a company that ostensibly distributed oil drilling equipment around the world and had offices in Houston. The company, API Distributors, Inc., also employed Mr. Shackley and Mr. Quintero, the report said. API shared office space in Houston with a company controlled by Mr. Wilson, Around the World Shipping and Chartering, which United States officials said was instrumental in smuggling the explosives to Libya. Mr. Hand and his bank, the Australian study said, did business with Mr. Kleins, Shackley, and Quintero, but the report did not elaborate on the details of the business arrangements. The report did note, however, that Mr. Kleins deposited, quote, millions of dollars in the Nugent Hand Bank. On the day that the body of co-founder Francis Nugent was discovered in Australia, said the report, Mr. Houghton arrived at Mr. Wilson's office in Geneva. According to an unidentified witness, Mr. Houghton left a travel case at the office, then departed. In April, the report said, as the Nugent Hand affair began to cause an important stir in Australia, Tom Kleins and Rafael Quintero arrived at Mr. Wilson's Geneva office. According to the witness, both men, quote, expressed some concern over what might be in the bag, and Tom said that he wanted to take the bag from me, unquote. That's Thomas Kleins. The witness said he refused, but the others persisted. Eventually, quote, the bag was opened in all our presence. Mr. Kleins and Mr. Quintero, the report said, studied the documents inside and removed one document. According to the report, quote, during the search, Richard Secord's name was mentioned, and Kleins said, quote, we've got to keep Dick's name out of this, unquote.
Okay, so the involvement of this team with the Nugent Hand Bank and, we went into Nugent Hand at considerable length in Radio Free America number 25. In fact, it was the first item that we took up in RFA 25, should be noted here. Something that we're going to be coming back to during the course of our third program, that involving the cover-up, concerns the death of Senator Zirinsky. And one of the names, by the way, to take note of in the Nugent Hand Task Force 157 connection, of course, Edwin Wilson. The next program, RFA number 30, we're going to be dealing with Wilson at great length. Now, it should be noted here that Zirinsky expressed concern about the Nugent Hand connections to this whole team hours before he died of a fatal heart attack. A little more about Zirinsky, this from the San Jose Mercury of March 8, 1987. It's an article from the Mercury News Wire Services called, Reagan calls Zirinsky a man of courage. About Zirinsky, Zirinsky will leave a major void on the Senate Agriculture, Nutrition, and Forestry Committee, where he headed the most important subcommittee dealing with products and stabilization of prices, and on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, where he headed a new subcommittee on terrorism, narcotics, and international communications, according to fellow committee members. Or, that's the governor of Nebraska, or a Republican must choose someone to serve the remaining 2 years of Zirinsky's term. She declined to comment on any aspect of the selection process. It should be noted that George Morales, among others, was going to testify, or perhaps still will testify, in front of that subcommittee of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, where Zirinsky previously had headed the subcommittee on terrorism, narcotics, and international communications. It should be noted that the governor of Nebraska, Kay Orr, appointed a Republican. The Republican's name was David Carnes. He is pro-Reagan. He's also pro-Contra. And interestingly enough, one of the interesting things about Carnes is that his family is well acquainted with the Bushes, that is, George and Barbara. Reading now from the San Francisco Chronicle, Thursday, March 12th of 1987. This is a story, Dateline, an AP story, Dateline, Lincoln, Nebraska, headlined, Republican named Nebraska Senator. And just a short section of this article dealing with the connection between the Bushes and the Carnes. Again, David Carnes succeeded Zirinsky. Of Carnes, it says, his wife Elizabeth, who has written 4 books on education, previously worked for Barbara Bush, wife of the vice president. So bear in mind all of the other Bush ties to the Iran-Contra aid network and some of the drug smuggling connections. We don't have time to go into them tonight, but remember them.
Just to show you that even some of the older parts of the affidavit, or some of the history, the older history referred to in the affidavit, the Daniel Sheehan affidavit, are yet as young as springtime. We bring for your attention and delectation an article originally published in the San Francisco Chronicle of Monday, May 25th of this year. An article headed, Singlaub Reveals Aid to Laos Rebels, an AP story out of Lowell, Massachusetts. Retired Army Major General John Singlaub, who testified last week before Congress about the Contra resupply network, said he is gathering military supplies, weapons, and humanitarian assistance for anti-communist guerrillas in Laos. Singlaub did not say how much money or supplies he and his organizations have provided to the Laotian resistance, according to the Sunday Sun of Lowell, Massachusetts. He told the newspaper that he gathered the aid through his international group, the World Anti-Communist League, and the U.S. Council for World Freedom, another group with which he is associated. Singlaub said no weapons were sold through the U.S.-based organization because, quote, that would be a violation of my agreements with the IRS and the Neutrality Act, unquote. Singlaub has been linked to support of anti-communist groups elsewhere in the world, including Afghanistan and Angola, in addition to the anti-Sandinista Contras in Nicaragua. Singlaub said he has been supporting the Laotian resistance for about 3 years to keep the pressure on the communist government in Laos and to maintain sources of information on U.S. servicemen. Singlaub believes some are still being held in Southeast Asia. He told the newspaper that he met Vang Pao, the leader of the largest Laotian resistance group, and had a recent meeting in Thailand with representatives of the leaders of 22 hill tribes that are trying to unite against the Vietnamese. Well, again, those who've just read... Listen to us read part of the Daniel Sheehan affidavit, hearing as Vang Pao referred to as the leader of the largest Laotian resistance group, when in fact he's only that by dint of the fact that he's leader of the largest Laotian heroin network, will have to have a small ironic smile flit across their face.
Now, interestingly enough, the connections and the use of the DEA for CIA purposes, and perhaps even as part of CIA, or the use of the DEA as an extension of perhaps DIA or CIA, has actually come to light in the hearings. Reading from the San Francisco Examiner, the words are going quickly now, this is an article, Dateline Washington, by Larry Margasak of the Associated Press, headlined, White House and CIA Tied to Use of DEA to Free Hostages. A plan for U.S. drug agents to rescue American hostages in Lebanon came from White House officials and was financed in part by the CIA, Senator Paul Tribal, Republican of Virginia, said Thursday. Tribal, a member of the Senate Iran-Contra Committee, provided new details to reporters as congressional concern mounted that the agents were used improperly, that U.S. drug agency relations with other countries may be harmed, and that the Reagan administration may have broken the law by failing to notify Congress of the operation. Representative Charles Rangel, Democrat of New York, chairman of the House Select Committee on Narcotics, said there was gross misuse, unquote, of the Drug Enforcement Administration personnel. He vowed that if the Iran-Contra hearings failed to reveal the entire story, he would hold special hearings to get to the bottom of the operation. Well, again, in Radio Free America shows 26 and 27, we went into the use of the DEA for CIA purposes. In fact, use of DEA to regulate rather than curtail the drug traffic. And it's worth thinking about the Iran-Contra secret team's manipulation of the DEA as you listen to the following event, which befell the aforementioned journalists Tony Avrogan and Martha Honey, who are the two plaintiffs in the Christic Institute suit.
Yes, if you want to note a case of overkill, this is one of them right here. This is an article Friday, May 15th, 1987 from the Mercury News. This is also, I might mention, our last article of the night. Headline, Agents Attempt to Search House of Journalists. San Jose, Costa Rica. Government agents tried to search the house of two U.S. journalists who filed suit blaming U.S.-backed Nicaraguan rebels for a fatal news conference bombing, according to authorities and the journalists. CBS cameraman Tony Avrogan said Wednesday that six narcotics agents, two officers from the government's Organization for Judicial Investigation, and a judge appeared at his house Tuesday after Avrogan's secretary picked up a package at the Costa Rican Customs Office. The secretary, Carmen Araya, was detained by narcotics police and taken before a judge where the package was opened and found to contain cocaine, Avrogan said. Avrogan said the judge withdrew the search order after Avrogan told him the drug allegations related to the lawsuit and were politically motivated. So Tony Avrogan, whose lawsuit has spawned the Daniel Sheehan affidavit and the full Christic Institute suit that we've been discussing tonight, opened his door to find everything but the partridge in the pear tree out there. The noose is beginning to tighten. The vice is beginning to clamp down a little bit, folks. We're going to be talking about that a bit in our next Radio Free America, The Terror Connection, but then, of course, even more in The Cover-Up Connection, which will be our third in this series.
Yeah, and again, the last thing to state is that, to a certain extent, the divisions among all of these things, obviously we've dealt with elements of The Cover-Up this evening, the divisions are, to a certain extent, artificial and academic, but it's a useful way of grouping and organizing the information. So we're going to begin picking up with Carew, with the anti-Castro Cubans, their involvement in drug trafficking, and their involvement in terror, both actual right-wing terror and ostensible left-wing terror, when we take up on Wednesday, June 24th, from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m., right where we've left off this evening. That will be Radio Free America number 30.